listeners, you're listening to Garden Planet with Selena and Karen.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon, and today we are going to be discussing part two of our topic, syntropic agroforestry.
Well done. We got the title. It's not as scary as it sounds, I promise. So, yeah, we were going to, today we were going to look at the pros and cons involved. Mm-hmm. We were going to look at a bit of methodology, so brace yourselves, and a bit of species, how they categorise their species, and how syntropic agroforestry compares to organic farming. There's a slight difference there, although the two kind of intermerge a bit, but yeah, we'll get into that. And also our plant of the week.
Yep, I'll interrupt you halfway.
Please do. All right, so let's crack into it. So the pros and cons. Well, I came up with 12 pros and 4 cons.
Oh,
so
okay.
So I'm just going to run through them. One, starting at one, yeah, for the pros. Crop yields are large. 2, annual income is steady. Crops are chosen and planted to yield harvest in stages. 3, income increases over the years as the fruit and timber trees start to mature. Because often, like in a forest, you'll grow lumber alongside your fruit and veggies.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So you've always got something on the go, in other words, is what they're saying. There's a thing, maybe they call it successional. They kind of have similar things in gardening and where you've always got something coming to fruit. But this is more on a productive scale.
Oh, yeah. What's it called?
Yeah.
Intercropping or?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
4, land space is optimised as production of vegetables is done alongside fruit and timber. 5, costs are minimised. Pesticides, fertilisers and mechanised farm equipment are not required.
Don't need big tractors.
So you don't have those overheads. 6, soil quality improves, so it's more fertile, soft, aerated, and there's a dominance of fungi, which is
yay.
7, here's the next pro, the farm is less reliant on frequent rainfall because of improved water retention. 8, the working environment is pleasant. Trees eventually provide partial shade, which is lovely.
Mm.
9, there's less weeding. So due to the increased mulch cover, you just don't have to weed like you would in a standard sort of garden or farm. Ground cover changes towards species found normally in forest rather than weeds found in open fields. 10, everything grows. Even finicky species can be cultivated. 11, improved plant health and resilience towards pests and diseases. Strength in biodiversity. And 12, and this was an interesting one that I just added in,
mm-hmm,
the foliage colour improves. It goes from grey hues to brighter shades of green. So it's a nicer colour.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So, yeah. And
what are the cons?
Cons. So, 1, the full rewards are delayed. So
you have to wait for
you need a bit of time. Although it sounds like, remember we mentioned the pioneer Ernst Gotsch, his seemed to happen quite quickly, just over a few years. So I don't know, maybe a few years in the farming community, a standard typical farming community is a long time before you start seeing revenue. I don't know.
Well, it's not like get rich quick, is it?
No, no, it's not. 2, so, but I've never been rich, so I'll be fine with that.
I don't mind waiting.
2, the farm can look messy to the untrained eye, so someone might walk in there and go, God, what's going on here? Are you hippies?
That's not a con for me.
No, neither, but some people would see it as a con. 3, it requires time and energy to learn the methods. And 4, those sun-loving cash crops can only be grown for about 4 years on a syntropic farm. So, agro.
Well,
so, yeah, that's the pros and cons sort of numbered there, which I thought was worth mentioning.
That con might have impact on my plant of the week.
Ah, yes, yeah. We'll get into that after the methodology.
Okay.
Because they'll definitely need a bit of your plan of the week after this, okay? All right, deep breath. The methodology involved. For a syntropic agroforest to thrive, it must include the two following characteristics. One, energy capture and handling. And two, accelerated growth and evolution. You cannot have a syntropic agroforest without those two characteristics.
Okay.
So light energy is captured via the process of photosynthesis and is handled via relationships that take place in complex networks of vegetation and life forms within the soil.
Okay.
I'll just give you a pause to get that in. Yep. So capturing and handling.
Yeah.
The ultimate aim of capturing and handling energy is to create nutrients and minerals that are usable to the plants. That's the whole point of it. That's growing stuff.
Yeah.
Right? And then through the process of succession, plant life moves towards species that are capable of capturing and handling more and more energy. So that's what we're trying to achieve through growing this. Yeah, like a nice, dense,
the trees,
diverse.
Because they get woody.
Yeah, I'll talk a bit about that.
Okay.
Yeah. This process is achieved through the maturation of a community of different plants, each of which serve specific functions and sometimes only short-term roles. So in the last session we were talking about annuals and perennials and how some, and I mentioned, oh, well, you know, sometimes those that only live for a short time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they all have their little role. Succession improves soil quality, biodiversity and moves the system towards longer living vegetation. So as your trees get bigger and bigger, all that, some trees will only get to a certain size, but it's all about having a long, like, living system. That's the goal. So like evolution, succession is the tendency for a natural system to evolve. So from simple to complex, thereby resulting in greater energy concentration, which is precisely what the term syntropy means. I've tried to simplify it as best I could, but back to the one and two characteristics: energy capture and handling, two, accelerated growth and evolution, and that's through your succession of plants. Harnessing the power of natural succession is integral to syntropic farming. The acceleration of successional growth is achieved by cutting back certain vegetation at strategic times.
It's like thinning out the canopy or something.
If left undisturbed, nature will transform bare ground into a thriving forest, and it can maintain this by itself. Nature has the ability to create fertilizer right from thin air, and the syntropic farmer knows this. So instead of trying to do nature's job, he looks for ways to help do its own job better. Many forests have unfilled niches, and so their full potential to capture and handle energy is not utilized, and also the growth and evolution of a natural forest system can be very slow. The syntropic farmer remedies this by filling niches in order to accelerate the development of a dense biodiverse forest system. A dense multi-layered forest system simultaneously optimizes energy creation and also provides protection. Protection is provided from the elements and also at the level of the forest floor by keeping the soil covered with organic matter. And this is a crucial practice in syntropic agroforestry. There's always pruning happening.
Would they just chop and drop?
Yeah. One of our favorite garden things.
No fuss,
no muss. Love it. Stratification. Now, here's another big word. I decided it worth mentioning because at this point, to achieve accelerated growth and evolution, the farmer must have an understanding of this core category of syntropic agroforestry. Stratification, simply put, is the categorizing of plant levels, and it is this knowledge that informs the farmer of how to correctly space the plant members of their forest. Many aspects of agroforestry design can be modified, but correct spacing must always be maintained because it is based upon the features of a natural forest. The stratification levels of plants range from that of emergent to high. Trees of the same level need sufficient space so that their canopies can grow to maturity without contact.
This ensures good sunlight penetration for the lower levels of the farm. Trees of different levels may be planted closer together because their canopies will grow to different heights, and so they are able to share the same vertical space. If their canopies end up getting too close, they can be pruned back.
Okay.
It's basically just how a forest looks. You've got your tall plants.
Yeah, the understory and then...
Yeah. But it's just mimicking that.
Okay.
So that was basically all the methodology I wanted to get into today. There are books and books on this.
Wow.
You can go, yeah. I mean, it was quite overwhelming for me. But then when you think about how a forest works, it is very complex, like...
Yes.
When you're trying to do it right.
Yeah.
Yeah, mimicking nature is not easy. But if you can do it and you learn how to do it.
Yeah.
It's just like anything, isn't it?
Yeah.
Once you learn these things.
Wow.
And a lot of it's observation and just watching and observing.
And the particular time of year that you may prune or do something.
So.
Wow.
I was thinking at that point we might just... Bring in your lovely plant of the week. What do you think?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay.
Of all the saddest words that I have ever heard, the saddest is a story told me by a bird. It's been about an hour of chatting with a flower. Here's the tale the flower told. Quote, I'm a lonely
now, little plant of the week can grow into a kind of a forest if you plant a lot of them. Is our sunflower.
Yeah. Yay!
Called helianthus in Latin, meaning sunflower. Pretty obvious.
Okay.
they do love the sun. So I'm not quite sure how it will fit in with the syntropic agroforestry part of it, but I'm going to try and see if I can squeeze in.
I reckon, because you don't normally find like, the only thing that I need to consider is where do you put the sun-loving plants? Because in a forest or a jungle, but they are there, but maybe just not huge fields.
Yeah. So,
or you might just have to thin out areas.
A lot
for
of
that.
People typically think, oh, sunflowers, huge, big fields of them, just all sunflowers.
Mm.
But you might want to grow a couple just by the fence. And
I've got a couple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have to have, like, huge numbers of them.
But then sunflower oil's yum.
Mm.
And sunflower seeds.
Yeah. Okay. So if you want to grow some sunflowers, it might be a bit late at the moment to start growing them. But the ones in our community garden are going to...
They are amazing.
Yeah.
It would definitely be too late, I think.
Yeah.
But
I won't tell you what you can do with them if you've got them already.
Yeah.
Okay. They can grow up to 3 meters tall.
Mm-hmm.
But the Guinness Book of Records or the world record for the tallest sunflower goes to one that was a Russian giant sort of skyscraper type.
Oh, Russian skyscraper. Yeah, there's a breed.
It grew to 9.17 meters. That is just really, really...
Well, that'd be all right in a forest.
Yeah. I guess it wanted to reach the sun. Now, the sun flowers, the flowers themselves will want to get the sun, and they follow the sun around just like daisies do. They're amazing. You can watch them and they will just like turn their heads to face the sun.
It's so funny. Like every sunflower I've grown, there's always been a bee on it. Almost at every point of the day. It's crazy.
Great.
They just sit on them and just eat.
Bees, yeah. Now that tallest one was grown in Germany by Hans-Peter Schiffer.
Yes.
And he like keeps getting these world record sunflower. I don't really know how he does it, but maybe you could email him.
I mean,
I saw pictures of
what
him.
Is he feeding it?
I don't know.
Some sort of crazy hormone?
I don't.
That's nuts. 9 meters, that's like a three-story house, isn't it?
And I saw like a picture of it and he's built like a scaffold.
You would have to.
So he could like...
Can you imagine if you're up on the third floor and you like look out your window and you're like, oh, it's so lovely.
Yeah.
That's cool.
But did you know you can also have dwarf sunflowers? Which
no.
is kind of strange, because you think, well, but sunflowers are meant to be tall. But you can have dwarf ones that are as big a flower as a normal yeah. sunflower, but they're just shorter.
Like how short? Like a metre?
Yeah, or a metre.
I think I've got a dwarf one then, and the one other one is not. It's about maybe 1.5 to 2 metres. But the other one of them, it's just a little one.
It's a great one for kids to grow, because they can have a competition on who's growing the tallest.
Such fun.
Very easy. Pop them in the soil. They say they don't really like to be transplanted, but if you're worried about slugs and snails eating your shoots, then maybe you can plant them in those peat pots. And then just pop them in the soil, those jiffy pots, those ones that biodegrade, remember we talked about those?
Yes.
Otherwise, just plant them direct where they are to grow in groups of 2 or 3 so they can sort of lean on each other.
Yeah, they do that. Yeah.
Otherwise, you might need to stake them.
Yeah, for sure.
Or grow them by a fence.
And another thing is, if you do, this is what happened, I think I talked about it last year on the show, if you do grow one in a pot, make sure it's a really big pot.
Yeah.
Because remember what happened to mine last year? It started getting windy like it is at the moment. And the whole thing just...
Then
it ended up decapitated. I found my sunflower head somewhere else.
Oh, no.
Beautiful, big. It would have been about 15 centimetre diameter.
Yeah.
Just cut right off because it must have hit something on the way down. The wind just blew the whole thing over. Oh. But my pot was too small to hold it. They get heavy.
Oh, top heavy, I suppose.
Yeah, they do indeed.
Tall poppies, but tall sunflowers. Now, if they do get decapitated, don't worry, because they can regrow from where you've cut them to more sunflowers.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So they'll sprout from those leaf buds down there.
And can you dry the seeds and eat them? Is that easily done?
Yep, so when they've become fully grown and they start to droop, you can cut them off, or you can tie like paper bags around the seed head so that the seeds can fall into your bags.
Mm.
And of course the birds love the seeds. It's just really good for birds. You can buy actually whole bags of sunflower seeds for birds, and you can plant those if you want. Like, you don't have to get those little packets. They only give you like 10 or so
seeds. Yeah. You could really go nuts with that. Yeah.
Best to plant them August, September, they just love the hot weather.
Yeah.
And
is that plant them by seed in August?
Yeah.
And what do you need to feed them?
Whatever you like to feed them.
They're not too fussy?
Not too fussy. Probably lots of manure they like. We'll have to contact Hans Schiffler. Find out what a secret is.
Oh, yeah.
The tip is don't plant them near potatoes because it will stunt their growth. Apparently they're not good companions.
Oh, yeah.
But you can plant them near melons and cucumbers and they'll happily clamber around them and cover the ground.
Oh, yeah.
So it is kind of like a forest if you're growing those plants together.
Yeah, so that's the three sisters concept.
Yes.
Yeah.
So for three sisters, that's corn, beans
and was it melons?
Melons and squash. And they all grow together in a sort of guild, they call it.
Yeah.
You know, the tall plant and the beans climbing up the stalks.
Yes.
Of the corn.
And then the melon providing ground cover.
So yes, you can use the seeds
awesome.
For oil, which is used in lots of margarine or just frying, you know. It's quite a nice oil.
Mm.
And it is used as a lubricant and soaps and things.
Mm-hmm.
You can roast the seeds and eat them yourself. So they're a tasty snack. And did you know that they can come in other colours apart from yellow?
Yes.
So you can get...
Brown ones?
Yes. Bronze ones, orange ones, cream ones.
Cream?
Yeah, creamy yellow.
And
black and red, apparently, though. I haven't really seen those ones.
What are those really tall... are they related to sunflowers? They're also really tall flowers that have got a lovely head. What are those ones called?
Jerusalem artichokes.
Is that what?
Maybe. Or dahlias.
Might be a dahlia. They grow quite tall, like a sunflower. I saw some at Point Shev in a garden, and I thought, I must ask Selena if that's related to the sunflower. Oh. They grow really tall. They've got a lovely little flower on the top. Well, not a little flower, quite a big flower. But it was a, I could tell it wasn't a sunflower because it was like lilac in colour, and I don't think there's any.
Yeah. Might be a dahlia, like a tree dahlia.
Okay.
Because they can grow really tall.
Yeah, they were stunning.
So apart from like using the seeds, it's just good to grow them because it'll attract bees and beneficial insects like predatory wasps. Remember our last program we talked about those? And hoverflies and, and one thing I learned about sunflowers is they've been used to clean up contaminated soil.
Really?
Like they'll suck up all the heavy metals.
Oh, wow.
And they've been used after Chernobyl, like to clean the soil from the ground that was contaminated from the big nuclear.
They're probably, I was having this discussion about contaminated ground just this morning in the house with what they're doing with all the Tesla batteries.
Oh, okay.
How, electronic vehicles are the way of the future at the moment and this and that.
Yep.
But then what to do with the used batteries if they're not recyclable?
Oh, what do you do?
Well, you plant sunflowers on top of them.
True.
Oh, I'm really... because you've...
Interesting.
Okay. Thank you for that, because I was pondering that this morning.
Although I was thinking, well, what about the sunflowers now they've sucked up all those heavy metals? Are they going to be toxic?
I hadn't thought that far ahead. Okay. Well, I need to ponder that now.
The jury's still out on that one, but they do clean the soil if you have got, like, lead in your ground.
Oh, that's such a wonderful plant.
Yeah, lovely, cool plant to grow. Not as popular as moonflower. I mean, moonflowers, there are such flowers as moonflowers.
Oh.
But sunflower is, like, the most popular, flower.
Yeah.
Apart from, roses, but,
They're close second, maybe.
Cheery and happy.
They are. They're cool, man. Yeah, I love it when you see people that have grown, like, a whole sort of garden full of them. You see it around the place every now and then. It's just like, you can't miss them. And it's just, they bring a smile to your face, don't they?
Great Valentine's Day gift, hint, hint. No roses, please. I'll just end them
now. Oh, good on you.
All right.
All right, well, thank you for sharing that, Selena. That was very cool. And I was thinking we should play a little song to commemorate the beautiful sunflower.
What have you got there?
I'm thinking Sunflower by Post Malone.
Okay, let's hear it.
She was all
to the sunflower.
Oh, yes, indeed. Thanks, Post. So, and there was another guy rapping with him there with that too. I forget his name. He's cool too. Right, so I just want to have a little quick discussion on how in syntropic farming they categorise their plant species.
Okay.
So let's take corn.
Yes.
That would be classified as emerging, short life cycle, belonging to the placenta of abundance systems. That's how they would classify it. This type of sentence is common among syntropic farmers. They refer to any species of plant by mentioning four categories, which are the fundamental criteria that must be observed in the orchestration of a syntropic crop. One, space, so for corn, emerging.
Mm-hmm.
So space is to do with, remember, the stratification we talked about?
You're thinking in terms of height?
Emergent, low, medium or high.
Yep. Oh, okay.
Well done, Selena. Two, time life cycle, so short life cycle for corn. Three, successional steps, so that's either placenta, secondary or climax. I don't think I described the successional, I didn't go into too much, but it's to do with a forest successional thing, is to do with from bare ground to mature forest. So you've got, you imagine bare is the least.
Yeah.
And then the placenta, and then at the climax, it's,
wow.
And then your systems, which is, it's either colonisation, accumulation or abundance. I didn't really get into that. But anyway, so let's just talk quickly about how it compares to organic farming. So many organic farming practices are based on the logic of input substitution. So chemicals are replaced with organic, plastics with biodegradable materials, pesticides with all sorts of preparations. However, the way of thinking is still very much aligned to that of the standard non-sustainable agricultural practices of which they oppose. What they do, however, have in common is that they combat the consequences of lack of adequate conditions for healthy plant growth.
Okay.
Is that?
Yeah. So, yeah.
So, syntropic agriculture, on the other hand, is a type of farming which allows the farmer to replicate and accelerate the natural processes of an ecosystem. A system that replicates ecological energy creation and succession by giving each and every plant the ideal conditions for its development by placing each one in their just right position in time and space. Having a better understanding of the ecosystem, and this is really cool because I talked about ecosystems maybe four or five sessions back. It's so crucial to everything, really, in the farming community, and enables a farmer to seek his answers using reasoning quite different from what they're used to. Syntropic agroforestry is not a technology package that can be purchased nor a definitive design plan. It is about understanding ecosystems and working in conjunction with them. So this is an agricultural method to finish off that is totally about true sustainability for both humanity and our planet. So we need to stop fighting nature and start embracing it. The fact of the matter is that when we work with nature, it will in turn work for us.
Yay. Sounds really like my cup of tea.
Yeah, I'm just so inspired by this topic. So that's why I did go into it a bit. Wow. So thank you for bearing with me, Selena and listeners.
Thank you, Karen, for sharing with us. I've just learned so much.
Yeah, awesome.
All right, then. Happy gardening, everyone. And have a think about the entropy of your garden.
Let it go into a forest. All right, guys. Thank you, Tay.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. That's all we have time for. Come back next week for more great gardening tips at Garden Planet. You can find us on Facebook on our Garden Planet Facebook page or email us at gardenplanetfm@gmail.com if you want to ask us anything about gardening. Happy gardening, everyone, and we'll be back next week.